Three chimes mean good times on NBC. Later this evening, Theater Guild on the Air presents a one-hour adaptation of the lighthearted Broadway comedy, The First Year, co-starring Richard Widmark and Katherine Grayson. And for adventure this evening, there's Joel McRae in Tales of the Texas Rangers. Now transcribed.
From Hollywood, NBC brings you Hedda Hopper. With tonight's news brought to life by William Farnham, Marina Cochette, and Gregory Peck. And here she is from the desk by the window looking right down on Hollywood and Vine, Hedda Hopper.
Hello, everybody. When General MacArthur was making his history-making speech in Congress, traffic on Hollywood Boulevard stood still. Telephones didn't ring. Elevators didn't run. Following the speech, I called Darryl Zanuck for some news, and he said 30 minutes after MacArthur finished, I registered the title, Old Soldiers Never Die, for a picture. Bernard M. Baruch said to me over long distance, General MacArthur's speech has made him impregnable. When I told you last week that Dick Cantino had been excused by his draft board and that he was going to work for Jerry Wald in the USO story, the yarn was given me by Jerry Wald. Now Wald tells me that regardless of the outcome, Cantino will not be in the USO story. You know, I've been flooded with letters from people throughout the nation asking if the Un-American Activities Committee isn't using the whitewash brush too freely. The public claim that Hollywood's biggest subversives are being overlooked, with which I agree. But please send your protest to Washington, not to me. And you'll soon be reading of the dismissal of six commies from one major studio. Hollywood talks hard times, so you can imagine my surprise when Metro gave Pinza $50,000 to extend his option for 60 days. Pinza finished his two pictures for them. One will be released in June, and they're playing safe by getting the public's reaction before they sign him for any more. Once upon a time, movies cost only a thin dime. Colored slides warned ladies to take off their hats. Western pictures were shot in what is now the heart of Hollywood. And the biggest star of all was the handsome hero of such epics as Les Miserables, Tales of Two Cities, The Riders of the Purple Sage, and The Spoilers. Well, this week he's celebrating his 60th year in show business. And where?
In Hedda Hopper's column.
Welcome, William Farnham.
Talking about epics, Hedda, you know, there was one about a drama on the high seas called The Battle of Hearts. And in it, I gave a very beautiful young actress her first part in pictures. Her name was Hedda Hopper.
Thank you so much, Bill. You certainly did.
Let's see, how long ago was that, Hedda? Let me see. I remember. It was the year I traded in my Stutz Bearcat for...
Easy now, Willie. Easy.
Oh, well, Hedda, dear, we'll just call it yesterday.
Thank you, Bill. You know, the Battle of Hearts was almost the end of William Farnham. You nearly drowned while we were shooting off Santa Cruz Island.
Well, we did things in the hard way in those days, Hedda. You know, in that fight I had with Tom Sanchi in The Spoilers, we went to the hospital together for 2 weeks after.
But you know, one of the funniest sights I ever saw, Bill, was you on Santa Cruz after they fished you out of the water. And there you were, wrapped up in a blanket like a mummy, and you were reading Julius Caesar. This was a pretty long time ago, Bill.
No, yesterday.
I love you, Bill.
Well, I love you and always have, Hedda.
Thank you, dear. You know, I don't think people realize that before you became our great screen star, you were a famous Shakespearean actor on the stage. And as time goes on and you live through more and more yesterdays, there's one passage of his that I feel you recite with greater authority than anyone I've ever known.
What was that, dear?
The Seven Ages of Man.
All the world's a stage. All the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances. One man in his time plays many parts. His acts being seven ages. Now, first, the infant, mewling and puking in the nurse's arms. Then the whining schoolboy, with his satchel and smiling morning face, creeping like snail, unwillingly to school. Then the lover, sighing like furnace, with woeful ballad made to his mistress eyebrow. Then the soldier, full of strange oaths, bearded like the pard, jealous in honor, sudden, quick in quarrel, seeking the bubble reputation, even in the cannon's mouth. Then the justice, in good round belly, with fat capon lined, with eye severe, beard of formal cut, full of wise saws and modern instances, and so he plays his part. The sixth age, shift into the lean and slippered pantaloon, with spectacles on nose, pouch on side, his youthful hose well saved, a world too wide for his shrunk shank, and his big manly voice turning again toward childish treble, pipe and whistled in its sound. The last scene of all that ends this strange, eventful history is second childishness, mere oblivion. Sans teeth, sans eyes, sans taste, sans everything.
Tomorrow the world celebrates William Shakespeare's birthday, but our own William Farnham helped make it a truly memorable occasion for us tonight. Judy Garland's boyfriend, Sid Luft, who followed her to England, will be sued for back alimony when he returns home. He was married to Lynn Barry, and for the past few months, he's neglected to help support their two-year-old son. It will take Sylvia Gable only 30 days to get her divorce in Nassau. It's a British possession, and so is she, and she'll ask no alimony from Clark. If you liked Spencer Tracy as father of the bride, you'll laugh even harder at him and MGM's father's little dividend. I don't believe Steve Hannigan will be too surprised when he hears that Anne Sheridan and Jeff Chandler are constantly together. This summer, the devoted patrons of the St. Louis Municipal Opera will thrill to the voice of Marina Koschetz, the daughter of the famous Nina Koschetz. And she's Serge Koussevitzky's favorite concert singer. Also, Marina has won acclaim in MGM's picture, The Great Caruso. And here she is in the Jewel Song from Faust.
Oh! s'estime tout forever.
You have another voice, too.
Well, Hedda, if you mean my popular singing, they always do seem to like a low register in the high-type saloons, you know.
Nightclubs, my dear. How about giving us a sample?
Sure. Here's a song I really love. Victor Young, You're Wonderful. My latest telescription, by the way. The flame that I've burned for, you're by my side to stay. Wonderful to be on a crest with this love we've been blessed with. It warms our every day. Casual kissing, the glow that comes with love. Now, my sweet, we're whirling, we're wheeling, we found a new feeling. It's
romantic ballads, and she cooks, too. Something else Marina Koschetz learned from her famous mother, who's the best darn cook in our town. Hold on to your hats for this one. Rita Hayworth took a party of 10 to see Charlotte Greenwood in Out of This World, and her escort was Tommy Manville. Vivian Blaine, the doll who created the part of the nasal Adelaide in Guys and Dolls, takes a daily singing lesson to keep her natural voice natural. She never uses it in the play. The Water Rangers have always kept in close touch with Gene Markey, one of Joan's ex-husbands. So Gene wasn't a bit surprised when Wanger phoned him from New York and asked him to take their youngest daughter with his and Joan's daughter to the father's dinner at the Westlake School. Confusing, isn't it? The picture David and Bathsheba out DeMille's DeMille. It has a bathtub scene with Susan Hayward that's straight from the Bible. I'm surprised DeMille never thought of it himself, but Greg Peck and Henry King did, and it's a Lulu. Peggy Lee's sending her husband, Dave Barber, to Las Vegas for the divorce. She couldn't go. She's too busy. One of the most delightful comedies ever produced at MGM was Ernst Lubitsch's The Shop Round the Corner, remember? Well, here in Hollywood, there's an actor who remembers that picture with as much fondness as I do. An actor who's never had much chance to play comedy on the screen, although he's scored many hits as one of our top dramatic stars. So here's my exciting news for tonight. Gregory Peck in The Shop Around the Corner.
If you live in Budapest, back in the days when the world was peaceful but also poor, and if you're the type of young man who is the senior salesman at Matuszek & Company, which is really just a leather goods shop with three or four clerks, well, then it isn't easy to find what you really want, a wife. Because, naturally, such a young man wants a wife with ideals. And there aren't very many ideals to be found in a store full of shaving kits and leather handbags.
Good morning, Martin.
Oh, Gurevich, do you mind if I ask you a personal question?
No, go ahead.
That's very confidential. Suppose a fellow like me wants to get married.
Well, that's wonderful. I wondered why you've been acting so strangely the past few months. Oh, why, that's the best thing that could happen.
Oh, wait a minute. I said suppose. I didn't say me. I said a fellow like me. Now, look, for instance, how much does it cost you to live? Just you and Mrs. Pirovich leaving out the children.
Why fool yourself?
Well, let's say temporarily. But suppose such a fellow took a three-room apartment, dining room, living room, and bedroom.
Why do you need three rooms? If you have the right girl, you live in the kitchen.
Well, where do you sleep? Where do you entertain?
Entertain? What are you, an ambassador? Now, listen, my boy, tell me what you're talking about.
Pirovich, it's true. There is someone. For the past few months, I've been writing to a girl. The most wonderful romantic...
Go on.
How can I write with her around?
Good morning.
Good morning, Clara.
Good morning, Mr. Martin. Good
morning, Miss Novak. Your sales book's there on the counter. We're pushing billfolds today.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Well, to work. Another day.
Miss Novak.
Yes, Mr. Martin.
I noticed that you wore a yellow blouse with light green dots yesterday.
No, Mr. Martin, as usual, you're mistaken. It was a green blouse with light yellow dots. But please leave my blouse alone. It's none of your business.
I'm sorry, but Mr. Matuszek seems to think that it is my business. He asked me to speak to you about it.
Oh, yes, that's right. I'm working under you. Well, from now on, I'll telephone you every morning and describe just what I'm going to wear.
Oh, for heaven's sake, I don't care what you wear. If you want to look like a pony in a circus, it's all right with me.
Mr. Martin, ever since I came here to work 6 months ago, you've personally gone out of your way.
I would not be personally concerned with you in any way, Miss Novak.
And I'm quite happy to say the same thing about you. Though why my prettiest blouse should disturb you so much...
It doesn't disturb me. Just don't wear it to work anymore.
I won't.
Pirovich, this girl I'm writing to... She's so different, so far above the girls you meet today, like shop girls.
Yes, you corresponded with this girl about cultural subjects, I suppose.
Well, after a while, we did come to the subject of love, naturally on a very cultural level.
Well, naturally, in a letter.
Pirovich, you're going with me tonight at 8:30 in a cafe.
To meet this wonderful creature? Why, I'd love to.
Oh, no, I mean... I think that it might be more gentlemanly that way, don't you, to have someone like you with me?
Isn't she good-looking enough to be alone with?
Oh, please don't say that, Pirovich. It's just that I haven't met her yet either.
What? You haven't?
You see, I answered an ad in the personal column. To her, I'm just Post Office Box 237. We don't even know each other's names. But do you know what she wrote? She said, someday you will take me out of my envelope and kiss me. Well, that's going to be tonight. Only what will I do if she's disappointed?
Don't worry. I'll be there to back you up, just in case she feels there is insufficient postage.
Can you see her? She's supposed to have a book. Anna Karenina by Tolstoy. With a carnation.
Hey, Martin. You said you wanted to be gentlemanly about this.
Why, what do you mean?
It may be difficult, but you promised to meet her, even if there is disappointment.
Well, what's the matter? What's she like?
I would say she looks... she has a little of the coloring. In fact, one might even say she has the face of Miss Novak.
No!
Martin, it's after 9 o'clock, and I told you I'm waiting for someone. And if that someone should happen to see you here talking
but
to
Miss
me...
But, Miss Novak, the only reason I would sit down at your table is because I'm tired. I've been walking around the block.
What?
You know, sometimes it's very difficult for a man to know what to do. It's not easy to be a gentleman, you know.
Do you feel all right, Mr. Martin?
Quite a coincidence, my happening to notice you in here, wasn't it? Well, I never expected to find you with Tolstoy. I didn't know you went in for high literature, for things with ideals.
There are many things you don't know about me, Mr. Martin.
Well, there are many things that you don't know about me, Miss Novak. And I'd like to take this opportunity to inform you right now that I don't walk like a duck and I'm not bow-legged.
What?
Oh, yes. I've seen those imitations of me that you do in front of the other clerks.
But... aren't you bow-legged? Why, I was told that you have to have your trousers specially made.
Oh, that's a lie. That's a lie, and if you think I'm bow-legged, you come right out on the sidewalk with me right now, and I'll pull up my trousers.
Let go of me. I'm waiting for someone. I wouldn't look at your legs if they were the last ones on earth. Let go of me.
All right, I will, and as far as I'm concerned, you can wait for him forever. Good night. I tried to do the noble thing and go in there and tell her the truth, didn't I? Can I help it if every time I get near her, I get so mixed up we start a fight? So if her heart is breaking, is that my fault, is it? I don't feel so good myself. I don't care how many days she's been sick.
But you stopped writing. She hasn't even got any letters from dear post office friend.
Oh, yes, she has.
What? You don't mean you wrote her the truth about who you are.
Oh, no, of course not. I've got a much better idea. Hrivich, I have made a great discovery. You can't get a wife and be a gentleman at the same time.
Oh, Mr. Martin, I'm so happy to be back at work. And you know what? My friend wrote me about seeing you and me together in that restaurant. That's why he didn't come in. Listen, here's what he said. He said, "Who is that very attractive young man? Just the type women fall for." Imagine.
Imagine. Miss Novak, he came to see me, you know.
What? Who?
Him. I mean, your fiance. I don't mind saying it was a very uncomfortable visit. He apparently didn't believe it when you wrote back that I meant nothing to you.
I can't get it into my head. Coming to see you, it doesn't sound like him at all.
Well, it's all right. I've straightened everything out. Don't you worry. Don't you worry a bit. In a little while, you'll be Mrs. Popkin.
Mrs. Popkin?
Well, that's his name, isn't it? That's what he told me.
Oh, yes, Popkin. That's right, I guess. Popkin.
Yes. Oh, he's a nice fellow. Don't you try to change him. Don't put him on a diet.
What? Would you call him fat?
Well, that's a matter of opinion. Personally, I think that little stomach of his gives him a nice homey quality. And that's what you want in a husband, isn't it?
Yes, that's what I want.
I thought so, and you're right. Oh, if I were a girl and I had to choose between a young good-for-nothing with lots of hair... and a fine, solid, mature citizen, I'd pick Matthias Popkin every time.
But he has a fine mind, don't you think? Didn't he impress you as being rather witty? If you read his letters, such ideals, such a lofty point of view. I could quote you passages.
Yes, and he quoted me one of those passages, and you know what? He stole that lofty passage from Victor Hugo.
I thought I was his inspiration. He didn't mean a single thing he said.
Oh, now, here, Miss Novak. Here, don't do that. Stop that, will you? Here, Miss Novak, I need some help over here. I've been trying to wrap up a Christmas package.
Oh.
It's a sort of a necklace thing for my girl.
Yes, of course, Mr. For who? Oh, no, Mr. Martin, not you.
Why, what's wrong with that?
Nothing. Who said there was?
Why shouldn't I have a girl? Is there something wrong with me?
No, stop it, please. I don't want to really fight with you. It's just that, I get psychologically mixed up.
Since you've been here, I have that sort of trouble all the time.
Do you? Oh, is that the... Oh, what a beautiful necklace. Are those diamonds real?
Pretty near.
I'm sure she'll... I'm sure she'll...
Clara. Oh, Clara, don't... Clara, I can't stand it any longer. Open post office box 237. Take me out of my envelope. And kiss me.
No, Mr. Martin, you must... You? Dear friend?
You're not disappointed?
Psychologically, I'm very confused. But personally, I don't feel bad at all. Tell me, you came to the cafe that night. I was pretty rude to you.
Oh.
Yes, I was. Don't you remember? Why, I called you bow-legged.
Yes, you did. And I wanted to prove that I wasn't. I was going out into the street and pull up my trousers. Imagine.
Yes, imagine. Only, would you mind very much if I asked you to pull them up now?
Them up, too, and after that performance, Greg Peck, your neck should be a comedy.
This week, our entire nation has been awakened. Awakened to what our country stands for, its principles. General Douglas MacArthur has brought this awakening with greater impact than has any other man in our time. His message transcends politics and petty jealousies. Having given 52 years of his life serving our nation, he asked nothing for himself or for America. Alertness, sanity, decisiveness, action on the part of our government and our people. By his action, he has reunited thinking, loyal Americans. His spirit of greatness is like a beacon in a dense fog of cloudy issues, vacillating decisions, incompetence, a fog that has laid this country wide open to the greatest menace that it has ever faced. And through MacArthur's spirit, we're on the beam once more. He's shown us the way, and it's up to each and every one of us to follow the pattern and finish the fight.
Next week, NBC will again bring you Hedda Hopper with Hollywood news brought to life by Florence Bates, Lionel Barrymore, Leo McCarey, and Bing Crosby.
Good night, everybody.
Hear Hedda Hopper next Sunday, right after Phil Harris. And in just a moment, hear Theater Guild with Catherine Grayson and Richard Widmark starring in The First Year. The Hedda Hopper Show is produced by FMB with direction by Gil Faust and music by Frank Worth. This is Art Baker bidding you good night.
This program was transcribed.